broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico. Phil Hendrick.
ABC News has learned that U.S. intelligence agencies became aware months ago.
Some of y'all just need to smoke some weed and see if it don't help the quality.
We do not know if his whole body is white or not. I think that's...
How do you know? Granted, popular president, got 95% of the black vote. You got any
this
shot...
This makes me a slut.
Oh, my Lord.
World famous Phil Hendrick show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. The Alice in Wonderland, the Through the Looking Glass experience of talk radio. Now, coming up, we've got, who's the guy?
We got Robert Greene.
Oh, Bob Greene will be with us next hour. This hour, though, we're very happy to bring on Guy Barton and Kurt Queedy from West Virginia State Legislature on abortion roiling Senate health care debate. Now, these two chaps are obviously state legislators, but they are very much involved in Democratic politics, both statewide as well as nationally. And this seems to be one among many things that's hanging up the health care bill, if you want to look at it that way, or one of the many things that is, you know, keeping a bad thing from happening, the health care bill. And that is this question as to the issue of abortion, the medical procedure, if you will, of abortion. Is it going to be covered by the public plan? Will it be available through the public health exchange? Meaning, two areas of the three tracks of public of the health care reform, which is, number one, private insurance, which you and I have, and if they give you abortions or they let you have an abortion, God bless you. And then there's the public health exchange, where you go, like a brokerage house, and find affordable insurance. Will those insurance plans offered through that public health exchange, will they offer that procedure? Should they offer that procedure? And then, of course, the public plan itself, which really, when you get down to it, is not going to cover all that many people. Will that make available to women the procedure we all know and love as abortion? Now, we do have some, comment on this, and then we'll get Guy Barton and Kurt Queedy on the line with us to talk a little bit more. From today's news, a few people weighing in here. Laura Flanders of Grit Television. And Ms. Flanders here slams the Stupak Amendment, which would keep out of the public plan and out of the public exchange plan the abortion option.
Abortion ban for everyone but the very rich. Presented by Democrat Bart Stupak of Michigan with the strong backing of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, the amendment would prohibit abortion coverage in the government-run plan and any private plan on the new marketplace that accepts people who are using government subsidies to buy coverage. It is sexist. It is classist. It goes well beyond the heinous Hyde Amendment ban on public funding for abortions. And it passed with support of 64 Democrats, roughly a quarter of the caucus. House liberals say they voted for it simply to keep the process of reform moving forward towards a majority. But women, we are the majority of Americans, of voters, of Democrats, and pro-choice women outnumber the other sort. The House move had less to do with majority, it seems to me, than it had to do with theocracy.
Now, here is Representative Anthony Weiner speaking out against the Stupak Amendment while on MSNBC's Morning Joe.
That this is a dramatic expansion. This isn't just saying that no federal funds would go for abortion. This says that no plan that's sold in the exchange is going to be able to even offer those services. So it's going to be a strange dynamic. If you're an individual citizen, you're going to have to go out and buy a reproductive freedom, a rider for an insurance policy, and no one ever does that. No one expects to have
So let's strip this down, though. We've been trying to do it for a couple of hours. Help us out here. So if I'm a woman and I want to go into this public plan, I know that if I go into that plan, I will not get an abortion paid for, that I will have to do that on my own on the side, right?
Right. Let's get Kurt Queedy and Guy Barton with us. Kurt, how are you doing?
Very good, Phil. Thank you.
And Guy?
Yes, Phil.
Now, you guys are listening to this. I want to play a few more clips.
All right.
And then I want to get your opinion on this. Obviously, we're hearing from opponents of this Stupak Amendment, which would prohibit women from accessing an abortion procedure by way of the public health exchange or the public plan. Now, here we have Debbie Wasserman Schultz from Florida. She says the Stupak Amendment is not going to be in the final health care bill anyway.
She's right to make her own reproductive choices. I am confident that when it comes back from the conference committee, that language won't be there. And I think we're going to all be working very hard, particularly the pro-choice members, to make sure that that's the case.
What's that?
I'm sorry, sir. I was listening to the lady just prior to this young lady, Ms. Wasserman, who I know very well. I was listening to the woman from Brit TV, Flanders.
Yeah.
Well, she, I tell you, she puts it out there. She's a woman that...
I was going to say she's a lady that is not afraid to ruffle some feathers, get a man's face.
And do you know if she's American or is she from another country?
I don't know anything about her. She sounds British, though.
Yeah, she does. She sounds British. I think that's probably going to rub some people the wrong way. If you get a liberal spokesperson like that out front who is from another country. But, you know, here's where I stand, and I know the guy agrees with
me. I got one more piece of sound here. I got Joe Lieberman, okay?
All right.
Joe Lieberman here talking about the filibuster. He says he's going to filibuster. The health care reform, if it includes the public option.
The House bill is dead on arrival in the Senate. Just look at how it passed. It passed 220 to 250.
Our colleagues in the House added a lot onto that that subtract from the genuine purposes of health care reform. And one was to create a public option plan. The public option plan is unnecessary. It has been put forward, I'm convinced, by people who really want the government to take over all of health insurance. They got a right to do that. I think that would be wrong. If the public option plan is in there, as a matter of conscience, I will not allow this bill to come to a final vote because I believe the debt can break America and send us into a recession that's worse than the one we're fighting our way out of today. I don't want to do that to our children and grandchildren.
Senator Lieberman, thank you.
All right, Kurt, tell me what your idea is for breaking this impasse.
Well, I think there's no doubt, Phil, the reason why we have an impasse on health care when it comes to abortion. I know there are a much bigger problem than just the abortion question.
But a lot of bigger, the public option, too, as well.
Right, and
well, let me just ask Kurt, Guy, what do you think is the solution to this abortion thing?
Well, I think it's very obvious. The solution is that you make abortion through the health care exchange, through the public exchange, through the public option. You make abortion available to all women. It doesn't matter what their income. It doesn't matter whether they're rich or poor. Because what you're saying essentially then to Republicans and to conservatives is that there will be no prohibition against wealthy women obtaining abortions any more than there would be a prohibition against poor women or middle-class women. Because you understand that most conservative women, Republican women, high-income women, are opposed to the idea of the government funding abortion because they have traditionally been vocally opposed to abortion in the first place. And because, Phil, those women have to pay out of pocket for abortion anyway. But if you have them included in the public plan, then they're all in.
Yeah, they'd be all in. They'd agree to that, Phil, because then that means everybody's covered.
You're saying the Republicans would go along with abortion being provided in the public plan as well as through the public exchange?
Absolutely, because now more Republican women are going to be covered because a lot of them are very high-income women, and it won't be out of pocket. Because up until now...
Why would a Republican woman go for abortion in the public plan or in the public health exchange because she's covered?
Until now, they've been vocally opposed on philosophical grounds, but you see, I think it's clear to anybody that Republican women, conservative women, they've all had abortion. I don't think there's any woman in America that hasn't had a need for abortion, no matter what her political stripe. The Republicans are going to come out against it, but they're going to come out in favor of it if it covers all women. No matter what your income, you see.
All right. If the public plan is only meant for people of certain income.
That's exactly right. But if the public plan, even if you're wealthy, the public plan says you go on ahead and have an abortion here on the public plan, now the public is going to be in favor of that.
Yeah, that's the only thing that the Republicans have been against. You talk about low-income women accessing abortion on a public plan, a Republican is going to come out against that. But if you tell the Republican that wealthy women, high-income women, are able to get abortion, then they're all in. See?
Why would they come out and say that they're in favor of abortion if it includes wealthy women?
Because that's the thing that has held them back, I think, more than anything else, the fact that none of these public plans, none of this federal spending has ever covered wealthy women. It's always covered women who have been of low means, indigent means, or poor women. And Republican women are going to say, well, I'm opposed to that. I got to pay out of pocket anyway, you know. But if now they know the government will pay for their abortion as well.
Well, then they come out as hypocrites, don't they?
Well, I don't think they come on as hypocrites. I think what you do is weigh one against the other. You say, well, I know I've said I'm against abortion, but if I know I'm going to be covered under the federal plan, well, and I think we can, weigh a doubt against a certainty and say, I'm in favor of that. That sounds good to me. I won't get one myself because no one ever going to know whether I'm going to have one or not, and I'm in favor of it.
Now, that's the one way, Phil, and I think a lot of people have not been clear on this. The only way conservatives would ever support abortion would be if wealthy women, conservative women, was covered federally as well.
But but understand something, okay? Then they say publicly, for maybe the first time in their lives, I believe in abortion.
Well, I don't think they're saying that. I think they're simply saying, well, now, wealthy women are covered too, that's good. And that's an economic statement. That got nothing to do with whether or not they believe in abortion as a moral thing. They're just saying, well, now, if there were a wealthy woman out there that want to get abortion too. You see what I mean? So it's economic.
Yeah, it doesn't have anything to do with morality. It's economic.
Well, this is pretty interesting.
Yeah, that's what I mean. See, people have never looked at that. And they're always looking at the tree. They're never looking at the forest, always looking at the tree.
You understand, Phil?
So you're saying that the opposition to abortion has always been economic. That is, if you're going to have a federal plan that pays for abortions, it should cover all women, not just poor women.
And that way the Republicans are in favor of that one.
But Republicans and conservatives have traditionally been against government spending, unnecessary government spending. Why would they be in favor of this?
Well, because abortion, when it comes to women, whether they're Republican or conservative or liberal or Democrat, abortion is not always unnecessary.
Yeah, that's very unfortunate.
I don't want to talk out of school, but I don't think anybody out there going to disagree with me when I say that a woman going to find herself in a very serious situation, and she may wake up one morning and say, I need myself an abortion, and not only that, I'm a Republican and I'm a conservative, I still need an abortion.
Yeah. And so what's she going to do, go out of pocket? She can't go out of pocket.
Well, Republican women can access abortions if this plan passed if they were poor, right?
Yeah, but wealthy Republican women ain't never going to have that thing. Now the wealthy women get to have it. And that way make everybody is treated equal.
877-876-PHIL. Guy Barton and Kurt Quidi on the line with me from the West Virginia State Legislature. On how abortion will make it into the healthcare reform bill, and that is if you guarantee that even wealthy women are covered under a public plan. So if the wealthy, as well as the middle class, as well as the low-income women are covered, then the Republicans and the anti-abortion people will go along with it. 877-876-PHIL. I don't get it.
Well, I'm not sure about it either, but I'm not a Republican.
I don't think you got to be a publican. I don't understand why the Republicans would say, okay, yeah, we're in favor as long as you're covering rich people, too. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, with Kurt Quidi and Guy Barton from the West Virginia State Legislature and your phone calls here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show. Famous Phil Hendry Show.
On the line with me is Kurt Quidi and Guy Barton from Charleston, West Virginia. We're talking here about the health care bill and the fact that the idea, abortion, the abortion procedure would be paid for in the public plan as well as in the public exchange. That is, the public exchange offering different insurance plans that would allow women to access abortion. This is a major stumbling block among many in the United States Senate. Now, what I'm having a hard time with here, guys, you got to help me out with this, Kurt. If you tell me that if the public plan and the public health exchange will provide abortions to wealthy women, then the Republicans will be in favor of it. Why?
Well, I know that Guy can speak a little bit more clearly to this, Phil, but number one opposition, I think, that Republicans and conservatives had to abortion in the first place when it came to public money was that it was always for poor women, you know. And the only people that could access federal money when it came to abortion was poor women. I think they felt that that was an easy one to oppose. These are poor people getting something for free. It did not help the rich. It did not help the middle class. It didn't help the upper middle class. And it was easy for them to say, well, you know, you have a kid, you're stuck with a kid. Now, you know what I know, and I know the guy knows this, that Republican women, upper middle class women, get abortion all the time. But it's out of pocket. And nobody has ever proposed that the government cover their abortion. And so,
yeah, but, you know, what you're basically saying is that while these people have been opposed to abortions for poor women, they've not been opposed to abortion.
Oh, no, I don't think anybody believes Republicans are opposed to abortion.
No, nobody believes a conservative is opposed to abortion. What a conservative is opposed to is only poor people get to have it. But if you can guarantee that a middle class or wealthy person is going to get abortion, I think the government is going to be in favor of that. Conservative is going to be in favor of the conservative I talk to anyway.
But conservatives, I go back to my original point, conservatives are against unnecessary government spending.
Well, this ain't unnecessary, though. This is money that's going to be spent not just for poor women, but for middle class, as well as upper middle class and upper class women.
And those women might be conservative, might be Republican, might be Democrat, for all we know.
But the Republicans are going to be more in favor of that because they know more their women are going to be able to access it and be able to pay for it by way of public plan. That's all I'm saying.
And that would have been if what you guys are saying is true, that would have been a solution to the problem a long, long time ago. 877-876-PHIL. Let's go to a phone call. This is Tom. You're on the Phil Hendry Show, Tom, with Guy Barton and Kurt Queedy. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, Phil. How you doing? Just want to let you know I think these guys are wrong. I mean, as far as it doesn't matter if they're rich or Republicans or Democrats, my understanding on the public auction, it's going to cover everybody. And as far as him saying, these guys saying it's
No, you're wrong. The public auction don't cover everybody. It covers only people that show a need, a financial need, for the money. But on the abortion, what we're trying to say is that the Republicans would be in favor of abortion if you didn't show a financial need, you just want to have one.
Yeah, it would have nothing to do with the money.
So, and that only that procedure would be offered regardless of how much money you had.
Exactly. Then the Republicans be all in favor of that. See? Because that means their women get them, too.
That means their women could get them, too.
That's exactly right.
I just feel like I said, I don't think it matters whether they're Republican or Democrat. It's, I just don't see it passing because of they're Republican and they think that they can get it because they're, wealthy Republicans. I think it's just a...
Well, I mean, you understand, that means them wealthy women going to get to have abortion and they don't have to show financial need. Well, hell, they're going down to get abortion just like a poor lady and they don't have to worry about money.
Right. With their wealthy Republicans and they want to go get an abortion, they go pay for it themselves. They ain't going to worry about no public option.
That's exactly, but they don't want to have to pay for themselves. If they get the government pay for it.
Yeah, it's such a bad dollars and cents.
Yeah,
so the Republicans have been opposed to abortion all this time? Yeah, go ahead.
I don't think the Republicans are going to support a public option just because of they don't want to have to pay for an abortion if the government's going to pay for it. I still believe, like you say, the Republicans are against useless government spending.
I agree with you on that. I agree with you on that. I think that's what they believe, but this is not useless government spending. if you say to a Republican woman, you know, I'll pay for your abortion too, even though you're rich, she said, well, that ain't useless. My woman needed an abortion just like anybody else. How come I got to go out of pocket on that one just because I'm rich?
Yeah, the government paid for it for a rich lady.
So, in other words, the Republican Party is in favor of abortion on demand, government paid for, so long as they get covered too. Thanks very much for your call, Tom. So long as they get covered too.
No, and so long as wealthy women get covered too. Because the Republicans, as you know, have always been more on the side of the people who are, I guess you'd say, more capitalist.
Yeah, the people are own the means.
Right. So the Republicans saying, we in favor of abortion if you're going to cut us in.
I get an abortion for my woman.
All right, we'll be back with Guy Barton, Kurt Queedy on the abortion debate and the health care plan, 877-877-6-
The world-famous Bill Hendry Show.
How do you call yourself a liberal?
I do. On some issues, I call myself a liberal. We're back on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show at 877-876-PHIL. We'll get to a phone call. I call myself a liberal because I am pro-choice.
But you're not in favor of public funding for abortion.
No, I'm not. No, I would have to agree with Mr. Stupak there. No, I'm not.
Well, you know, Phil, it's a very important issue. A lot of women want to be able to access legal and safe abortion. Now, if it gets the Republicans on the side of abortion, and that would be public funding for abortion in the public plan or with a public health exchange, if it gets the Republicans up off the duff, you know, into the football game, by saying, all right, we're going to cover all income level, which means a lot of Republican women are going to get covered.
What makes you think there's all kinds of high-income women that want abortions?
Oh, come on, Phil.
Let me answer that. Phil, I can't believe you're that naive.
So there are a lot of high-income women. What makes you think all these high-income women want to have a public option?
Because that's the one thing that keeping these Republicans and conservatives. I know Rhonda Mitchell. I've been to a lot of parties of hers. She's a very heavy hitter, very, very big name in Republican and conservative circle in New York City. I've been to a lot of parties at her house. And I brought this up. And she said, joking one night, I said, well, you know, if they made abortion something that was paid for by the government, even for a high-income woman, would you be in favor of that? She'd go, hell, I'd get 2-1, you know, because she's joking with me. But the fact is, these women are opposed to abortion, public money for abortion, because it's just more tax money for a whole bunch of poor women they don't know and they don't want to know. But is that money going to go to them, too? See?
So it's economic.
Oh, it's always been economic. They're just the one thing about Republicans, you got to understand, it's my opinion, not that they're moral, they're just cheap. You know,
right there. What he said there, they're not that they're moral, they're cheap.
Oh, well, okay. I mean, I'm sure you get an argument on that one.
I know I get an argument on that one. What would you rather be known as, a man that's moral or a man that's cheap? Or would you rather be known as a man that has high standards or a guy who's got deep pockets and short arms, you know?
Yeah, go out back and dig up another can of nickels, you know?
All right, 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL. We'll go to a phone call here and get some comment. Jessica in Los Angeles, you're on with Guy Barton and Kurt Queedy. Go ahead, ma'am.
Hi, yeah, I just wanted to call
yes.
in about the whole Republican women would back up the whole abortion deal if it covered them. And actually, it's just a fundamental difference here is that Republican women tend to think that that's a responsibility you have to follow through with. It's not. This is not a financial deal to them at all. See, abortion is used as a birth control method where, you know, you're not living up to the responsibility of your act. So if you acted irresponsibly and you ended up pregnant, the responsible thing to do is to raise the child and live a better life and learn from what happened rather than to just erase it and, you know, use it as an excuse to not to be irresponsible and to continue to live an irresponsible life.
Well, I know that that's what they say. But, you know, as the man said, you know, there's the way it is, the way it ought to be, and there's my way, you know, the way it is. There are a great many women, upper-income women, that have abortion. I'm sure you know that. And a lot of them are Republicans. If you said and acknowledged to the American people, look, every woman have abortion. They all need abortion if they think they do. And some of them are Republican. Why don't we just pay for all of it? You're going to get Republican on board on that one.
There's no question about that.
All right. So what you're saying is this. Republican women are afraid to acknowledge that they get abortions?
I think so on some level. I think there's a... you know, PDQ. You know, everybody, a wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I think if you just acknowledge, look, I know you get an abortion. Everybody know. Everybody get abortion.
Okay.
Now, let's just pay for the American women to get abortion, and let's stop all this nonsense about, you know, morality and all this nonsense. We pay for everybody.
Excuse me. Yes, ma'am.
I apologize. Go ahead.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. If it's true, that
would be my idea. That's all I'm trying to say.
Go ahead, ma'am.
Okay, if it's true that all these women are having these abortions, that's just that's going to show you that all the sex education in schools is not doing what it's supposed to do. We have condoms. We have birth control. There are so many things that people could be doing that they're not to prevent the pregnancy from the first place. That's the problem here, is that they're not being responsible in their actions. Don't get pregnant. Use a contraceptive.
That's a good point. Yeah,
but well, you don't need to do the abortion, period.
And what about that guy, the sex education?
Well, you know the old saying, I don't have to be there. I'm not the first one to say it, but if a frog had wings, wouldn't bump his rear end so much, you know. And I, like I said, you know what I'm saying, don't you, ma'am? Yes, ma'am?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but the fact that we want to have abortions available for everybody is a reason for them to use that. If you don't have it available for them, they realize that their consequence is something they have to live by. So if you get rid of the abortion, people will know it's not an easy escape. We have to
I'd like to say something, Phil, if I could.
Go ahead, Guy.
To the young lady, if you knew that an abortion was available to you through public funding, wouldn't that relax you a little bit more? And you'd
and
know, well, I can relax.
That's the problem.
I can relax. I can go ahead and do what I need to do because I know the government going to pay on it.
What I need to do is if I'm going to go out and live a very
relax
lifestyle, I would wear have a condom available or be on birth control. That's the responsible thing to do. That should be the thing that causes you to calm down. Not the idea that you're going to go into a hospital, put your legs in stirrups, and have somebody put foreign objects in your vagina and do things that could possibly cause you damage down the line. It's about respecting your vagina. It's about respecting your body. It's about respecting yourself and not putting yourself in the exposure.
Well, darling, I understand that. Well, that's a perfectly good point you're making there, but you know as well as I do when you're promiscuous in the first place, whether or not they have a condom on them, you're still putting something foreign in there.
She's not talking about that. She's talking about the abortion process.
Well, I think it's a difference between whether you want to stop at a drugstore or just go ahead and have a man. You could stop at the drugstore. Who knows, you know? But if you...
Or
you could just say, look, I'll take a trip on down the clinic tomorrow, and a man's going to get that Hoover hose, and it's all good.
What do you mean the Hoover hose?
I apologize, but you know what I'm saying. The point we're making here is, what's that? Say that again?
Yeah, listen, I just wanted to
I didn't hear what you said.
Well,
you're
going to
siphon it out of there.
Yeah.
I wanted to acknowledge that, yes, there is a level of promiscuity that happens here, but this is the reason why.
You have something foreign in there anyway, you know. That's all I'm trying to say.
Okay. But you're right, Jessica, and your point is, Jessica, your point is very clear. This process is a frightening and ghoulish process. Why put yourself through it? Why not exercise some discipline? And I understand what you're saying. 877-876-PHIL.
Well, I want to comment on that discipline thing, so that's all well and good. But when push comes to shove, you know, and lickety-split,
when a rubber meets the road, you have to understand. Are you going to say to somebody, you should have had a condom, you should have done this, should have done that? Said, I know what I should have, could have, would have. Should have, could have, you know.
Yeah, I should have, could have, would have.
Well, should have, could have, would have, that's one thing. But now I want to go down and get myself an abortion just like this lady did, and she's poor and I'm rich. How come I can't get one?
You can afford it. You're a Republican woman or you're a wealthy woman?
That shouldn't make any... Why does that make a difference whether I'm rich or poor? She gets to have one, I don't. Government going to pay for her, not for me? No.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Let's go to another phone call here. We have Kathy on the line from Washington State. Kathy, go ahead. You're on the line with Kurt Quitty and Guy Barton. Go ahead.
Hi, Phil.
Hi.
I can't believe that I am even hearing what I'm hearing. I am so offended and shocked. I am a conservative. I used to be a Republican. But to stand and to say such things as... Every woman in America has had an abortion or has wanted an abortion, is such, and that it's, this issue is based on money, I can't even begin to tell you how offensive that is to me. My husband just walked in the room, and I was standing there with my mouth open, and I said, I can't even believe that these individuals are saying such a thing, because the whole issue of abortion, and I appreciate what that lady said right before you allowed me to speak, is that it's an issue of behavior, and it's an issue of consequences. This is not an issue of money to a true conservative or a Republican. It is an issue of the sanctity of life. And if you understand that your behavior has consequences, I don't care whether you're poor or whether you're rich. There are still consequences to your behavior. And it's that
well, that's
very
all
problem.
Well and good. I understand that. That's a very good point, and I don't disagree. But, you know, I'm living here. I got my feet on the ground. You know, I haven't been on cloud nine since Friday night.
Excuse
you know.
Me.
And I'm trying to live in a... Yes, ma'am.
Neither
yes,
have
yes,
I.
Yes, ma'am, we have.
I, yes, I ma'am. Live... we homeschool our children. My husband has worked. I have worked. We are not living anywhere on cloud nine. We are living in a very, very real world, and we are in.
But if you see a poor lady, yes, ma'am. If you see a poor lady get abortion, and you look at that, you say, now how come I can't get that? Because the government paying for her. I got to go down the street here and see a woman, and I got to come out of pocket on this.
No,
well, that's not
no.
right.
First of
and,
all,
you,
first
you,
of all, you wouldn't
yes,
find me
yes,
going
yes.
to look for an abortion. I have two lovely daughters, and my husband and I...
But if you did need to go down and see, like, the, you know, in the old day they call it the witch queen, don't see that no more, but if you had to go down and find a lady, you know,
no,
working in the back of a
no.
store or something like that.
No, we're talking about a clinic now.
That's right.
I understand that, but I think what we're missing is a whole much larger issue that we as a nation and as an... And apparently, as leaders, we have...
You know, I think we could cut through this real quick if I could just ask this young lady one question, Phil.
Absolutely.
Well, all right, but you interrupted her, but...
I apologize, young lady. If you found yourself, and let's say something went wrong, like y'all bought the wrong kind of car, I don't know, I don't want to get too personal, and you are pregnant, and next door is a lady, and she's poor, and she's going to go down and get herself an abortion. And you got to go out of pocket on this. Ain't you going to say, well, hell, look at that. Now, she gets to go down and have that thing, you know, have all that taken care of. You know, they're going to put the whatever they do. And I'd like to go down there and do the same thing. I got to go out of pocket. I don't feel like that's fair. I don't think that'd be wrong.
Well, I guess...
You know, look at the split.
But see, the greater issue is whether the whole thing of abortion... If you're just getting rid of a massive protoplasm, or are you murdering a child? And because of your
well,
behavior,
let's not get dramatic. You know, I'm not
being dramatic because my
yeah.
personal opinion is
well,
as valid
like
as yours. And,
of course,
excuse me?
But you're getting very dramatic. Well, you're getting very dramatic.
Yeah, all this looks like shrimp cocktail. What we're trying to say.
Don't say that, shrimp cocktail.
The lady said protoplasm.
Look at, but if you guys want to talk about the financials, that's fine, or the economics. This woman is talking about something far greater. She's talking about the morality involved in her mind and in the minds of many other women of terminating a life.
All right, but wouldn't you rather have the government terminate that life on an equal basis than you go down and pay for it yourself? That's blood on your hands, as opposed to the poor lady. The government had the blood on his hand, and she's scot-free.
Yeah, she walk away.
No, but you know what?
What?
For the poor woman or the rich woman, if we were a country that was saying, look, this is an issue of morality. This is not an issue of economics.
Uh-huh.
That's the issue. And we have stepped so far away from the issue of the behavior and the consequences. And so many people are not being held accountable in a variety of areas for their actions.
Why can't I say shrimp cocktail? I think shrimp cocktails.
See right there.
You know,
that's
crude. That is foul. That's foul. Listen, I'm sorry.
I
Lisa,
just
go
wanted
ahead.
To say that.
Or Kathy. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you, Phil.
Your name's Lisa, right?
Her name's Kathy.
Well, you said her name was Lisa.
Her name is Kathy.
So
I
appreciate.
I said it looked like shrimp cocktail. I said it's not shrimp cocktail. I would never say that. But
I'm
she
sorry,
said
but you did.
I thought that. Well, you said the protoplasm. That's something about a Ghostbuster.
You know what?
That's
what
ectoplasm. That's not protoplasm. Ectoplasm. I appreciate your call very much. We're going to take a move on to another call here. Thank you so very much, Kathy. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Lisa on the Phil Hendry Show. Lisa, go ahead with Guy Barton and Kirk Tweedy.
Yes, good evening. Now, first of all...
Good evening.
I don't know who that gentleman is. And my name is
Kurt Queedy, and my partner here is Guy.
I'm Guy Bartman.
Okay, but the other ladies that called up, they really did have a point, and I agree with them that it does have a lot to do with personal responsibility. However,
let's talk about your pocketbook. What about the squeeze on your pocketbook?
Let me speak as a woman, the lady. Please.
Yes,
Number
please.
Number one, you are not a woman. You're doing all of that talking, and you're talking about women.
I tell you what, I had a couple of drinks one night. I thought I was a woman.
Let her talk.
Let me have my say, please.
Dressed up like a lady.
You are talking about women as if they're like dogs and cats. You don't have a woman's body. So you don't know what a woman experiences within her body, whether she is going to carry that child or whether she decides that she wants to have an abortion. I feel
what do you mean I don't have a woman's body? I had a woman's body next to me 3 nights ago.
You're not a woman.
That's a joke.
To carry a child for nine months. You don't know. And
yes,
I don't feel as though it's your decision or any other man's decision to make kind of a decision for a woman.
No, ma'am.
And I think you are advocating abortion for your own ends and your own means. And
no, ma'am. I'm just saying if a wealthy lady
want
to have money.
You don't care about poor people.
If a wealthy lady want to have money.
You don't care about poor people. Because if you cared about poor people, you would have decent education and would be teaching them. They would be able to have an equal opportunity. So don't give me this poor people.
Well,
crap.
Ma'am, I believe in poor people having a right to
abortion. No, you don't believe in rich people. You don't even have a right to be poor.
You don't respect women because you're not sensitive.
Well, at least I say
you
I respect
talk about
you know.
Women like they're dogs and cats, like they just can go and go to get one of these procedures like it's
Well, how come what I'm saying don't make no economic sense? You know it make economic sense. I let a poor lady have an abortion. I want
to
let the rich lady have one, too.
You don't have to let a poor woman have nothing, because let me tell you something. I'm almost 70 years old, and if a woman wanted to have an abortion, I'm almost 70. And if a woman wanted to have an abortion, they would find a way to do it. So you don't be telling me.
Are you saying you almost 70? You had an abortion. You almost 70. You had an abortion. I must have misheard the lady.
I didn't say I had an abortion. I said if
you said you had one at 70.
I said if a poor person wanted to have one, they would.
You know, I had a puppy one time. That's like having a baby.
You know, a guy. I don't know if you heard him. Guy just said.
You and no other man have no right to be sitting down
to have an abortion at 70.
Any kind of legislation on a woman's body.
But have a baby, but not an abortion.
Yes.
Period.
You guys are talking over this woman. She was making some good points.
I just want to say I had a puppy one time.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
What did he say?
I had a puppy one time, which is kind of like having a baby. You know, I'm kidding around with you, man.
That's exactly what you are. You're very insensitive, and you are a man of low character and morals, and you have no respect for
women
at all. You are
all right. Thank you so much. Thank you for your call, ma'am, and the very good points. We'll be back with Kurt Queedy, Guy Barton, the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
Phil. Well, yeah.
I like that.
Eight seven seven 877-876 Phil. Senator Lindsey Graham tells CBS not to count on the House bill getting anywhere in the Senate. The House health reform bill.
The House bill is dead on arrival in the Senate. Just look at how it passed. It passed 220 to 215. It passed by two votes. You had 39 Democrats vote against the bill. They come from red states, moderate Democrats from swing districts. They bailed out on this bill. It was a bill written by liberals for liberals, and people like Joe Lieberman are not going to get anywhere near the House bill. It cuts Medicare by $500 billion. It's over $1 trillion in new spending. It does have the public option. So the House bill is a non-starter in the Senate.
What do you think about that, Kurt?
Oh, I think he's wrong. I think we can strike a balance. I think we can strike a compromise. I think we can do very, very easily. And all you do is tell these Republicans that abortion is going to be available to wealthy women, And a Republican is going to see the light of day, despite what a lot of these people are saying.
877-876-PHIL is the number. Let's go to a phone call. Ricky, listening to us in Canton, Ohio tonight. Ricky, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Sir, go ahead.
Oh, hi. Hey, you guys are
pretty good.
I give you credit. But let's look at it
well,
from another
you.
Aspect.
Thank you very much. I try to entertain, you know.
Okay. Let's look at it from another aspect, okay? Now, women who are practicing Roman Catholics, abortion is so far against their religion, it's ridiculous.
Well, that's what they say, you know.
Women who are Orthodox Jews, again, if they're truly practicing, abortion is 100% against their religion.
So I've heard.
Women
I
who
said,
are...
So I've heard, you know, but that's one thing saying, another thing doing. One thing saying, another thing doing.
Let me finish, and then you go on and step on what I got to say. I know you'll do it. Women who are in the Muslim religion, women who are in the Muslim religion, they'll die before they'll get an abortion because their husbands will kill them.
Well, how come there's so many? Well, I guess that explains why there's so many of them, you know.
Okay.
But,
all right. The good points there, Ricky. I got to take a break, though. I appreciate your call. Thank you very much, Guy and Kurt, for your input. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Let me just,
finish up and say, you know, I disagree with Mr. Brady.
Finally tonight, although it pains me to say this, Jon Stewart, Comedy Central, he was right.
You're a single mom of a teenage son who's 18.
We're going to prevent a lot of students from low-income families to be able to afford to come to
the school. I have met before from behind.
Now, isn't that lovely?
Burning hell made from rattlesnake hide. I got a brand new...
Our world-famous Phil Hendry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. This is the News Talk and Entertainment Show where reality is the bitch, the Alice in Wonderland, and through the looking glass of talk radio. Coming up, UCLA students protest tuition hike. Senator Kerry's daughter has been arrested for some sort of misfeasance. I believe it was a DUI, bud.
Yeah, she blew a 1-0.
Don't smile when you get out of here. 877-876-PHIL. Don't forget that every night we have a... Oh, you know what I forgot to do? We'll bring Ted on here in a second. Every night that we have a... radio show. We also have a live streaming video and audio feed of that show on our website. Phil Hendry Show. Turn off the thing. We're going to bring on Ted here in a minute. So go to our website, philhendryshow.com, and check out the live streaming video and audio.
Portion of the Phil Hendry Show is brought to you by Ted's of Beverly Hills. I'm Ted Bell. Come on down. We have got that slow roasted rib. It's a rib. What is the name of that? It's a rib. It's a prime rib. That's it. How do you spell prime?
Ted Bell joins us for this portion of the program on the Phil Hendry Show. How do you spell prime?
Yeah, you know something, Phil, it's interesting. I've got a series of cue cards that I use here before I come on the program, and somebody spell the word prime, and it's, I'm not blaming them. I should know products that I've got in my own restaurant. But we're having a very good, very, very interesting night tonight. New Year, or excuse me, Thanksgiving's coming up, and we have got Ted's Beverly Hills going to be open all day on Thanksgiving. So if people are interested in coming down and spending their Thanksgiving with us, the prime rib room is wide open. We'll have our usual salad bar, which of course, and we get a lot of people confused. It's not an all-you-can-eat. We don't do that, and. Our restaurant, I think, is a very classy place, but we don't do all you can eat, and I want people to know that coming in, that they dress appropriately. But Ted's of Beverly Hills, in Beverly Hills, on Rodeo Drive, we certainly will hope they join us for Thanksgiving.
Yeah, there was a story here, Ted, that we wanted to talk to you about because it had to do with tipping.
Absolutely.
And tipping, of course, is the way a great many waiters and waitresses and so forth. Here it is, right here, as a matter of fact, make their living.
That's not necessarily the case. I think tipping is, if you want to know, Phil, what tipping is about, I can tell you. There's a misconception about tipping, and I've been in the restaurant business now for some, going on 30 years after we took the business of my father, who was, as you know, very ill, and he had a drinking problem, and that's the way some families go. Some people have to deal with a recession. We had to deal with a father who had an alcohol problem, but we were able to resurrect the business that he had almost ruined. And put our life into it. And so I understand every aspect of the business.
All right, well, what you were going to say, what is tipping?
Tipping, Phil, is a way for the customer to feel that they have extended themselves, that they have done something good, that they have gone above and beyond. They've come into the restaurant, they've sat down, they've had a meal, they've paid their bill. And they see the waiters and the waitresses, and most cases they're living a better life than those people. In most cases, they're making more money than those people. The customer wanted to feel better about having people bring them food, and they just generally wanted to feel better about themselves, because the experience of coming into a restaurant, believe it or not, Phil, we found this out in research, the experience of coming into a restaurant for most people is a demeaning experience for a lot of people. They feel as if they don't deserve it, because what's happening is you're ordering food that ordinarily you have to cook, and there was a time that you had to go out and kill it, and then they're having it served to them, and that certainly brings up guilt feelings. How do you help people who are sitting down in your restaurant feel better about themselves so that they are not sitting there depressed? You allow them to tip.
But the tip, as we know, let me just say this before I, because we have this story.
You were mentioning a story, and I interrupted you.
No, you didn't. I asked you a question. It's okay. It was an evening out that college students Leslie Pope and John Wagner will long remember. Not only did they get what they called lousy service, they got handcuffed and they got arrested all over a $16.34 tip. Now, I want to go to the audio that we've got here, because I do have some audio of the students talking about this. NBC Television in Philadelphia actually did a report on this arrest. And these kids apparently claimed that they had bad service. And they were with a half a dozen friends at a place called the Lehigh Pub in Bethlehem last month, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. And so the establishment apparently...
Well, I didn't think it was that Bethlehem where Jesus was born. And I'm making a joke, but...
No, it's Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
All right, you know, every time I hear Bethlehem and it's the holiday season, I'm thinking somebody stiffed someone on a tip where Jesus was born. I got to make a comment about that.
All right, well, they were with a half a dozen friends at the Lehigh Pub in this Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. So the establishment tacked what it called a mandatory 18% gratuity onto the bill of about $73, according to reports. They refused to pay because the service was terrible. And so they, the establishment called the police. And they said they had to find their own napkins and cutlery. While the waitress caught a smoke, they had to ask for the bar for soda refills. In other words, they got no service at all. So here is NBC Television in Philadelphia reporting on the experience here of Leslie Pope and John Wagner at this pub.
The couple was with six friends at the Lehigh Pub in Bethlehem last month, where after dinner, they refused to pay a mandatory 18% gratuity for what they say was lousy service. They say not only did they have to wait almost an hour for their order of chicken fingers and fries, but Pope says she had to seek out napkins and silverware for the table.
And at this point, I'd become really annoyed because they'd already gone up to the bar myself to have my soda refilled because the waitress never came back.
Pope says when the $73 bill came, the group paid for the food, drinks, and tax, but refused to cough up the mandatory gratuity for parties of six or more. When she explained to the bartender in charge why, she says he took their money, then called police.
So you got a comment on that, Ted?
Well, again, I got to fall back on what I know as a restaurant owner, that the tip is primarily to make that individual who's being served feel better. When someone throws a few quarters on the table and they think they're actually helping someone make a living, you got to kind of laugh at that.
Well, how do you handle it? You heard this.
Well, we have a mandatory tip.
You have a mandatory tip.
Oh, yeah, we tack on a mandatory 50% on every single bill. So that people know that. We will say to them, here is the tip that is mandatory, and of course, what I'm thinking is, this is so you can feel better about yourselves. Go ahead, and you won't have to leave money on the counter. We just go ahead and tack it on, and then they feel better that they are being told this is the tip, they can pay their tip, and they can walk out of there feeling like human beings, like a lot of customers want to.
And then you divvy the tip money up at the end of the night, right?
Well, no. What we do with the tip, you got to understand, that is a mandatory tip on the tab, because customers expect you to want them to tip. And most people feel a little weird not tipping. And so what we say is, here's what you're going to tip, and they are very happy to pay that.
But what I'm saying is, when you tack a tip on like that, do you divvy it up?
Well, let me tell you how we do it. My job is primarily, I'm the owner, I'm the manager, I'm the administrator of a restaurant. That my job should only entail managing the restaurant, managing the accounts, taking deliveries on supplies, and making sure the entire operation runs. But what I also do, which is not a part of my job description, I go table to table, I meet people, I shake hands. We have the prime rib room, which is where a lot of Hollywood people will come in and have a drink after they're done, making their TV movies and all of this. That's not part of my job description. So the tip money that we tack on to the bill will go to me. But that isn't what tips are about.
But you don't share it with the staff.
Yeah, but you're missing the point.
What am I? You're saying
people don't tip. They don't care whether the money gets to the waiter or not. They don't care whether it gets to who it's supposed to be. They just want to know that they tipped. And so what restaurants are doing really, Bill, is just making people feel better about sitting down and having someone come up and serve them food because they, for whatever reason, they don't eat at their home. Maybe they don't know how to cook. Maybe they don't know the first thing about preparing a meal. Maybe they don't know what a grocery store is. I don't know. But they come into a restaurant, and someone's got to feed them. And so the tip was designed so those people can feel a little bit better about themselves. See?
Well, then what you're basically saying is the following. The lousy service that these college students got...
Well, it's lousy service, but it doesn't have anything to do with a tip. You're going to tip. If they tell you it's a mandatory tip, then you're going to tip. Because it's a mandatory, it's part of the bill, you see?
Even if the service stinks?
You are tying the tip to service, and you're tying the tip to the service. The tip has nothing to do, anybody in the restaurant business, and I think anyone listening to your program tonight, and that would mean probably everybody who's ever been in a restaurant, can tell you that they feel good just being able to leave money because they sat down and they had to have somebody come and serve them food, almost as if you're an infant,
Well, wait a minute. Now, if I go to a restaurant, I'm not an infant. I'm going to a restaurant.
Yeah, okay. Why are you going to a restaurant?
I'm going to a restaurant because I like the idea of restaurant. I like restaurants. I like to sit down. I like to look at the menu. I like to look at the surroundings.
Well, you're a very rare breed. Most people go into restaurants because they want to have something to eat.
Of course I want to have something to eat. I understand that. But I'm not necessarily in there because I don't know how to shop for groceries.
Right. But the point being, do you feel good when you tip? Do you feel good when you tip?
Yes, of course I do.
All right. That's why the tip was designed. So that you can feel
the couple
good
was with six friends at the Lehigh Pub in Bethlehem last month.
Wait a minute. Hold on. We got a problem. I apologize, Ted. We had some audio fire. Go ahead.
That threw me off.
Yeah, you were saying...
It threw me off.
All right, but the essential point...
The essential point is the kids in Bethlehem, wherever that is, they didn't get good service. They did get good service. They had napkins. They didn't have napkins. Cutlery, it doesn't make any difference. The tip is built in. You will tip whether they come to this table with botulism-ridden food. Now, that's wrong. I understand that. And of course, the restaurant is going to be cited for that. But I don't think if the food is inedible, you got to tip it part of the bill. It is a long-standing tradition, the tip. It has to do with making those people feel better. And I can tell you one thing right now, Bill. If those students had tipped, if those students had gone ahead and coughed up, whatever the few scraps of pennies they had that they were being asked for, they'd feel a lot better about themselves today instead of the bourgeois, spoiled, rotten brats that won't even tip a server that wanted a cop a smoke. And I can tell you I think it's wrong, And I think
yeah, but you're not even sharing your tips with your servers.
If I got to repeat myself.
No, I know. You're saying that the tip, it doesn't matter whether you share them with the servers. So why are you keeping them?
Because I'm doing a job that I'm not supposed to do. I'm going table to table to make sure people are happy. I'm the owner of the restaurant. I should only be sitting in an office on the phone and doing that. But instead, I got to go table to table and say, did the food arrive? Are you eating? Has it been an hour? You know, and trying to smooth over any bad feelings created by those servers. So, to be honest with you, Phil, the tip, I keep the tip because it makes more sense because I'm doing something above and beyond. The server is just doing what they're doing. But, again, it doesn't matter to the people leaving the tip.
Well, I can tell you...
It doesn't matter to the person leaving the tip. They don't care if you took the tip money and threw it out in the middle of the street for cars to run over it. It doesn't matter.
I can tell you it would matter to me.
Phil, I've been doing your show long enough to know that you are always going to come up with a contrary point of view, because I know that that's how you get the ratings of the controversy.
No, I'm telling you, if I knew that the tip money that you were charging me was not going to the servers, but was instead going to you or just anybody, it would bother me.
Well, you apparently don't eat in restaurants that much, because that's not what most people tip for. They tip just to feel better about themselves. It's an ego-driven society, and I give people an opportunity to walk out of a restaurant without feeling as if they're the scum of the earth for having someone much poorer than them spoon feed them their dinner.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Ted Bell talking about the art of the tip and these young people that were stiffing the servers on their tip in Bethlehem. People don't tip because they want to help the server. People tip because they want to feel better about themselves. We'll be back with Ted Bell on the world famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
You're not getting about what I'm saying.
We're back with Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills, the sponsor of this portion of the program. Ted, you know, we're talking about tipping and this story in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, about the students that didn't tip because they got lousy service. But you're saying there is no such thing when it comes to tipping.
First of all, Phil, of course you want good service. Everybody wants good service. I demand that my servers provide good service. But that isn't what the tip is about. Most people come into a restaurant because they want to feel... You know, to be perfectly honest, because I've done a study of this, most people come into a restaurant, and let me tell you this, and anybody who owns a restaurant and disagrees with this, they're lying to you. Most people come into a restaurant because they want the thrill of having someone doing what they tell them to do. To see them going back and forth into a kitchen and carrying out platters of food. And I've noticed the looks on people's faces in restaurants. They just stare at the server while the food is being placed on the table. They're not looking at the food, they're looking at the server. Like, as if to say, look at what I got him doing. Now, as the evening goes on, they feel more guilty about that until the end of the night, they want to tip. And so that's why, all right, we'll let them tip. But it doesn't matter whether it gets the server or not.
The servers probably think it matters.
Servers think a lot. They think, you know what, is there a recession on? Yes, there is. Are they getting paid? Yes, they are. Are they employed? Yes, they are. Is there a recession on? Yes, there is. I say that twice. Because that begins and ends every sentence any employer uses these days.
877-876-PHIL, talking here with Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills. Let's go to a phone call, and we will continue this conversation in the next half hour. Here is Jessica. Jessica, you're on with Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills. Good evening.
Good evening. I just want to say that I'm a server, and I work for tips. And he is very strong.
You say you work for tips?
I work for tips. Yes.
You work for me.
That is my main salary. And I
Did she say she works for me?
No, she works for tips.
I work
You don't
for
work
tips.
For Ted Bell. Okay.
No, I work for tips. from
All right.
For tips and customers.
Okay.
And
right.
I provide excellent service to receive my tips. And I in no way think that the tip should ever go to the owner for doing his job and greeting his customers that are coming into his business.
That's not my job. That's the job of the hostess. Not my job. That's not my job. You know,
you're the owner of the restaurant.
Yeah, but my job is to make sure that the accounts are straight, to make sure the supplies are delivered, to make sure that the, you know, the restaurant's running properly. To go out and actually meet and greet is what the hostess ought to be doing when she's not on a cigarette break. And so, you know...
Well, why would you disparage somebody?
I'm not disparaging, I'm just saying, because I go above and beyond what I do, I get the tips.
And I do, too, as a server. I go above and beyond my job, especially when gratuity is added, to make sure that these people are going to get everything that they need so that they are going to tip me well, not my manager.
How do you know they're going to tip you well? You say you're going above and beyond before they even tip.
You don't know. You don't know. You have
well,
to
then
have
you don't, then you don't know.
You don't
what
know.
Do you do,
but if
what
you provide
do,
good service, a decent human being will tip you what you're supposed to be tipped.
You don't get
there aren't
you
that work.
I know what you do, and I know that you work hard. But people don't tip because they feel sorry for you. They tip to make themselves feel better because they've had you running back and forth, bringing them platters loaded down with food.
I don't want them to feel sorry for me. I want them
field.
To thank me for my service. I don't want them to feel sorry for me.
Well,
I chose
you know
the profession. This
yes,
is what
yes.
I do. Tip
but,
me
but
for
you
the
know
great service.
But they enjoy watching you hop too, bringing them large platters of food as if they just called you in from the field.
That's
indecent
wow.
Human beings,
yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, I know. It's sad. It's very sad.
But for the most part, I have very
think,
good customers that aren't coming in
boss,
to watch me hop
your,
around.
Your boss must make a lot of money on the tips.
All right, we'll be back with Ted, 877-876-PHIL. Ted's in Beverly Hills on tips.
Phil Hendry.
Where's the caller?
Ted Bell, our guest here on the Phil Hendry Show from Ted's of Beverly Hills, and Ted and I have been talking about tipping as it relates to the story in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, where some college students decided they weren't going to tip because they didn't get very good service. And I've heard your point, Ted, about tips not being for necessarily the customers. We got some phone calls to get to.
Before you get to the phone, let me explain something, Phil, because I think this is very, very key, and I think people are missing this. You know, I've owned a restaurant for a long time. My father, God bless him, had a drinking problem, as you know. And I'll never forget, my father died on the same golf course that Bing Crosby died on. My dad died on the 18th hole of a course in Spain. And he died of a heart attack on the 18th green. Do you want to know the people that were with him? He had a bet going into that hole. It was a carryover for, I think, something like a couple of $100 on skins. When he collapsed and died on that green, they went through his pockets looking for the skins money. And
oh, God, what a story, Ted.
But it brings up the point. And the point is this. I had a young server. Her name was Bernadette. And she was leaving one night. And this is before we had the mandatory tip where I just put 15% on the tab and people paid it and felt better. And I said, did you have a good night tonight, Bernadette? She said, yes, I did, Mr. Bell. I said, how much did you make? She said, I think she said she made about $300. And I said, and how did you make that? She said, well, good service. I said, above and beyond what you're already being paid for? And she said, I think so. I said, well, what did you do above and beyond what you're being paid for? She said, I brought them their... And now I could see her starting to sweat because she couldn't think really of what it was she did that was above and beyond. And I said, so you really didn't do anything above and beyond? And she said, no, sir, I didn't. And you know what that young lady did to her everlasting credit? She reached into her little apron, and she pulled out the $300 and gave it to me. And I remember the honesty of that young lady to this day. And that's when we put in the mandatory tip. And
what did you do with the money?
I didn't. What did you say?
What did you do with the money? She gave you her $300 in tips?
I put it in the glove box in my car. I don't know. I might have used it for valet money. That's not the point.
Well, you're saying that you take the 15% that you charge for tips and you keep it because it doesn't matter if it goes to the servers because people only tip to feel better.
Yes. Sometimes am I going to say, do I got to say it until the tears come out of my eyes? Yes.
No, not until the tears come out of your eyes.
Well, I'm going to start crying here in a minute because what I'm telling you is people want a tip because they feel guilty that they sat there like a plantation owner watching the, you know, the indentured servants hop too. So to me, it's a small price to pay.
All right, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, as we talk here with, we got Shannon. Shannon, you're on the Phil Henry Show. Shannon, go ahead.
Hi, yeah, I've been a server for about 5-6 years.
Uh-huh.
And I don't understand how the owner of a restaurant is stealing from his servers.
Whoa. Now, hold on. That's not stealing. How's that stealing?
You're taking the tip money that was left for your server, and you're putting it in your own pocket.
Well, here's the thing, Shannon. They don't leave the tip money on the table. It's tacked onto the bill. See?
So you're so it's supposed to go to their paycheck, but yet they're not getting that actual money?
Well, you see, how can you give them tips when they're only doing what they're paid to do? Like that girl Bernadette, I said, what did you do? And she started to sweat. She was sweating blood. I mean, this girl was so nervous because she couldn't think of what it was she was doing above and beyond that she began to sweat big droplets.
I'm just saying, going over and over and beyond, you're saying that as an owner of a restaurant, you deserve to sit in your office and just kind of sit there. No, you want the whole experience.
No,
you want your servers to be happy. Therefore, their customers are going to be happy. Therefore, people are going to come back. If a customer taking the tip from the server, regardless of if they had a good experience or not, they left the tip for the server. They understand.
First of all, I want to ask your credentials, because if you're working at a and you sound young, if you're working at a Chuck E. Cheese or you're in a mouse costume, it's a little different, right?
Well, they get paid a little bit more than $2.13 an hour, do they not?
No, I'm talking about you. Where you work, or do you wear a costume, or is it a pizza place for kids, or what is it?
No, I'm 22 years old, and I now currently work in a bar.
She's a woman.
Oh, I'm sorry. I heard your voice. I thought you were in a rodent costume at a Chuck E. Cheese. I apologize. You do sound very youthful. I'm sure people told you that.
Yes, I have heard that. Okay. Yes.
Here's what I want to say. When you wait tables or tend bar, people are coming in to know what it's like to have you do what they tell you to do. Because that's how lousy their lives are. And after you serve them all that stuff, then they feel bad and they tip you. But
have
it isn't about them
before?
Wanting...
Or have you just been thrusted in this amazing opportunity to take your daddy's business?
Well, get a load of the lady in the mouse outfit. You know, ma'am...
Well,
she said
saying,
she doesn't wear the mouse
the
outfit.
Well, you really got a pair on you for walking around in a Chick-fil-A costume.
Can you even answer the
look
question
don't,
now? Have you ever
well,
served
your,
before?
Ma'am,
have you
I'm
ever
an
been
owner
your
of a
service precision? Oh my gosh!
Can I a server's precision?
Position.
Ma'am, after 9/11, as you know, we had a security problem in this country. I instituted security procedures for our restaurant that would not scare our patrons, but at the same time would ensure the safety of our restaurant. I didn't know what to do. We began by dropping a quarter on the floor in the foyer of our restaurant so that naturally people are going to bend over to pick it up. I thought it was a good idea. Women would bend over. Well, then they said, you're looking up their dress. Okay, fine. What am I going to do then? So I had them come into my office. So I'm in my office a good 4 hours a night dropping quarters on the floor. I don't know what you want me to do.
Are you telling me that for 4 hours a night you're doing a security check for your restaurant?
That and other stuff. But it isn't my job to make sure that some deadbeat isn't going back to the salad bar that isn't a sizzler all you can eat, see? And I'm saying to Shannon, I'm sure you do a great job. If you worked for me, I'd love all the tips that you got, but I have to take them because you know that they don't care about you.
You don't take them. That is stealing from your servers.
Not if they're not doing anything above and beyond. If they're just bringing food out and making people feel better that they are pretending, you know, they're bringing food out like they're wishbone at the chuck wagon, that's one thing.
But, Ted, you know, you're talking all around.
Do you tell them, hey, if you don't go over and beyond, and this is what over and beyond means to me, I am going to take your money? No, because it wouldn't work for you.
What is above and beyond for you? What do you do besides get into the... Well, you don't get... Okay, so you don't work at the Chuck E. Cheese?
We've already established she works in a bar.
When I hear her voice, she sounds like she's in a costume.
Well, don't discriminate against me just because I have a higher pitched voice. I'm not
discriminating. I'd hire you in a second to put on a wolf,
Well, I wouldn't work for you because you steal from me.
I'm not stealing from anyone, ma'am.
What would you consider, Shannon, above and beyond your normal duties? What do you do in the evening at your job or in the afternoon, wherever it is, to above and beyond?
You're constantly cleaning the restaurant. You're constantly making mm-hmm. sure everything's soft. You're making sure that other customers and other service tables are happy.
Well, I don't. That doesn't make any sense.
What doesn't make any sense?
Pre-bussing the table. She said she's a bartender. That means she works behind the bar.
So she's wiping the bar down.
I work at a bar, but my bar has servers. And I've been working in restaurants ever since I could have a job.
I'd put you on the phone. Would you do me a favor? Just please, would you say good evening, Ted to Beverly Hills?
Excuse me?
Would you please just say the following phrase, good evening, Ted to Beverly Hills? Would you please just do that for me? Good evening, Ted to Beverly Hills.
No.
Yeah, see, she can't do it. And I'd have to steal her tips.
What?
I gotta steal your tip. You can't even say Ted to Beverly Hills, and you're telling me you're pre-bussing tables? No. This will not stand. You're telling me that you're doing all this stuff, and when I ask you the simple thing, say, good evening, Ted to Beverly Hills, you're frozen. You're frozen with fear.
Shannon, I'm sure you do a great job.
I'm sorry, my phone's breaking up, so I couldn't really...
All right, I appreciate your call. We'll let you go.
I wanted to say good evening, Ted to Beverly Hills.
She doesn't want to say that, and...
Okay, well, then I realized she can't even say that. I mean, if you clean the toilets and you help the valet parkers, that's going above and beyond. Beyond that, it's above me, you're beyond me. You know what I mean?
All right, Shannon, thank you very much. Thank you. Great call, and best of luck to you. 877-876-PHIL. Ted Bell.
Phil, I wanted to bring up, I sponsored this segment, and yet here you are. Thanks a lot, Shannon. Great call. Thanks a lot. The points that I am making...
Ted, look, when you asked the girl to say Ted's of Beverly Hills...
She couldn't do it, and she's telling me that she's, quote, pre-bussing a table? No, there's something really fishy about that, if you ask me, okay? Now, here's what I call going above and beyond. If you're a waitress, and yes, you also go in and sponge out a toilet, I know it sounds...
Oh, come on, man.
No, let me tell you something. That's really important.
Why don't you do it?
Why don't I do it, huh?
Yeah, why don't you do it?
So I'm supposed to go table to table smelling like one of those toilet cakes.
Well, you want it done. There's an old saying, do it yourself. Here is Kurt. You're on the Phil Hendry Show. Kurt with Ted Bell tonight. We're talking about tips. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, Phil, I just wanted to thank you, man. I really enjoy your show and everything.
Thank you.
This gentleman here, as far as I'm concerned, he's totally out of line with doing a mandatory tip and not paying his servers or anything. I've got a question to ask him because I know that servers only get a certain amount of money and everything, and they depend on his tips, depend on the customer's tips. What does he pay the people that work at his restaurant?
I pay minimum wage.
You pay minimum wage?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
So as far as I'm concerned, you're only giving them minimum wage, and you're expecting these people to go above and beyond what they're expecting
for their
to
tips.
Do, and you're only giving them minimum wage, and you're taking the tips because you've got them tacked on. Let me ask you a question.
I'm taking the tips because I'm doing the only guy in the restaurant who's doing a job above and beyond seems to be me. I'm going out and I'm talking to the customers, which I, on any given night, I'd much rather not do because you know how they drink. I'd rather be in my office reviewing, you know, prospective employees, etc.
Okay, let me ask you this then, because there's a very expensive restaurant here in the town where I live at, and the owner is a very awesome gentleman, and he has no problem whatsoever coming out and doing whatever he needs to do to greet his customers. I saw him serve. I saw him do a lot of things. Are you beneath that?
Well, I got to tell you, there's a little bit of a difference. I'm Ted Bell. I own a steakhouse in Beverly Hills. You know, I'm Ted Bell. This gentleman that you're talking about, but I'm Ted Bell. The gentleman you're talking about, I'm sure he's a great guy, and he's got a nice roadhouse or whatever he's got. But what I've got is a gold mine. I'm sitting on gold. And,
right,
I'm Ted
and
Bell.
I understand this, but we're
what does that mean, you're Ted Bell?
He doesn't
I've got a personalized license plate, you know.
Okay, all right, fine. That's all fine and dandy, but what you're trying to do is sit and say that you're above everybody else? Is this what you're trying to say? Because the gentleman that I'm sitting here talking about that owns this restaurant, it's definitely not a steakhouse. It's very elegant. They use real china, real silver, and everything like that. It's an extremely nice...
Do they have different place settings for each time of the day? Yeah,
yes, they do.
We do.
Yes, they do. And they have china, they have silverware and everything, and it's an extremely nice dining place. So as far as I'm concerned, you know, looking at you, and you're paying your
what is his
I don't go into a restaurant because I want to feel, you know, like I'm extraordinary just so I can get in there and watch the service and everything. I go into a restaurant because of the service. And when I tip somebody, I don't tip them, you know, just to make me feel good. I tip that person.
Well, I wish you'd tell the truth, sir. It would be a lot better if you'd just be telling the truth here. You know you go in there because you want to see them scurry around.
And it's normal.
You're wrong. I'm saying it's normal. It's normal. I'm Ted Bell, so you're asking me. You're asking Ted Bell to do what?
No, I'm sorry.
What is this? I'm Ted Bell.
You're sitting there telling me I go into a restaurant because of number one.
You're going into the restaurant because you want to know what it was like to tell them, hey, you. Go get me a bowl of slop or whatever. And that's okay. I'm telling you, it's okay. There's nothing wrong with that.
You're going to feel guilty.
Well, you know,
you're looking at it from a dollar standpoint, and I'm looking at it.
You know who I am, right? I'm Ted Bell.
Ted, we know that you're Ted. I'm sorry. You know, I don't mean to interrupt you, Kurt. I know that you're Ted Bell.
Well, so if you know I'm Ted Bell, why are you allowing him to ask me these questions?
Because they're good questions. That's why. They're very good questions.
You know, the fact of the matter is you're putting yourself like you're above.
Wow.
You're doing your employees a favor by, I'm paying you minimum wage, you know, and I'm getting all the tips and everything. And, you know, your ass is sitting on a gold mine, and you're sitting there basically stealing from your servers. And
they feel better when they let me have the money because they know that it wasn't about their service. It was about you coming in and feeling guilty that you were running them around like it was Gone with the Wind. And they want to feel...
I've never felt guilty being in a restaurant
You wouldn't feel guilty if you said to somebody, hey, Mammy, cook me up some flapjacks. You wouldn't feel guilty about that? Well, I would.
That's not what people say when they go in a restaurant. Yes, please, I would like the flapjacks, thank you very much. That's what normal, civilized human beings say.
But they're thinking. I'm trying to say what they're thinking. Hey, you, go get me, you know.
Kurt, you've made some excellent points.
You've lost the concept of, you know, that know your reputation, know your restaurant and everything, and that's one of the reasons why I go in a restaurant, because I know their reputation, and I'm like this. If I go in, if the food's not good, the service is not good.
I got to ask you something. The guy that owns the restaurant, does he have a personalized license plate? No, he doesn't. That's the difference. There's many differences. He does? Or does it just seem like it? Like they gave him a license plate that said, I am a cook, or it was like, you know, but it was all an accident.
All right, Kurt, very good call tonight. I got to take a break. 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back with more from Ted Bell, 877-876-PHIL, in a moment.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, but I'm Ted Bell. And that... God.
Phil Hendry.
And we're back with Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills this evening. We're talking about tips and tip money and the idea that you keep the tip money that is intended for your servers.
Well, it's not intended for my servers. It's not intended. Let me explain to you, Phil.
We've got very little time. I want to get. Tell you what, we'll hold Ted over for the next hour here.
Yeah, as well you should, because I have not been allowed to give my side of this, and people have been.
I think you have, Ted.
No, I don't think I have, and I'm the sponsor of this segment. So is that...
All right, what did you want to say?
What I want to say is the following thing. You know this young man, this disc jockey who is on Sirius, Bubba the Love Sponge. You know this kid?
Yeah, Bubba, we're familiar with him.
All right, but you haven't met him?
No, I haven't met him.
Well, he happens to be a friend of mine. He comes into the restaurant, and Bubba was in 2 months ago. And I had the tip money from the night before that I collect for my services, walking the floor and meeting people, in many instances, who have had way too much to drink. And I pulled out a 20. I had a couple of cigars, Cohibas, which Bubba likes. And we went out to the patio that we have where the fire pit is. You know where the fire pit is? Right off the primary room, right?
Yes.
Okay. I lit both of our cigars with 20s from the tip money. Now, do you realize that the servers saw this and didn't say a word? Now, what does that tell you? It tells you that they understand...
No, it tells me that they're probably in fear for losing their jobs. What would you have done if they were to say something?
What do you mean if they were to say what? What are they going to say?
Hey, Mr. Bell, why are you lighting your cigar with tip money that you could be giving to us?
Well, they're not going to do that. They're not going to do...
Yeah, because they're going to get fired.
Because they don't want to be rude to... I'm hearing my jingle.
We're going to go to the next hour.
They don't want to be rude to Bubba the Sponge. I mean, Bubba the, the Sponge.
Yeah, Bubba the Sponge. We'll be back on a world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL with Ted Bell on tipping.
We want to put our meat in your
mouth. Phil Hendry. Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
And this just in, Oprah Winfrey will announce tomorrow that she's decided to end her show.
Is he staying his job, Congressman?
No.
So he's not coming clean with
I can't believe my ears. It was the Kennedy and Johnson administration.
Yesterday we told you about Sarah Palin kicking off her book tour.
I had a wet dream last night.
And that's just the way it is.
World famous Phil Hendry Show here every night until 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show where reality is the bitch. And on this show, it's a sort of Alice in Wonderland through the looking glass of media and reality that we do each and every night. And we are going to welcome on again this evening Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills. Ted is talking to us this evening about tips, the story in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, where some college students stiffed the servers on their $16 tip because they said the service was lousy. The tip is built in, and that's kind of a different thing, you know. So they put it on the bill there, and they say, well, you know, you got to pay it anyway because that is the tip. But these people decided that they didn't like the service, and they were not going to pay for this service. And, again, we bring Ted on. So, Ted, in your essential philosophy is that...
My philosophy is that it's not my philosophy. This is still the way it is. You know, it's a very interesting thing. I love it when people tell me my business, and I'm not trying to lord over anybody, but I'm Ted Bell. You know who I am. I've got one of the greatest steakhouses in America. I know people don't tip for the servers. So when servers are telling me, hey, Ted, you know, you're stealing, they don't understand that nobody is tipping for their service. They're tipping so they can feel better about having just sat there and ordered another human being to feed them as if they're an infant who is just off the nipple and is now on solid food. As crazy as...
That is very, very difficult to believe.
I'm going to tell you a story, okay? And then you can say what you want.
I got to get to some calls, though.
I'm just going to tell you a story. You know this kid, the two guys from TV...
You were talking about Bubba the Love Sponge.
Not Bubba the... I'm not talking about the Love Sponge. I'm talking about this kid... You know these guys, Greg Gutfield and Andy Levy? You know them?
Yeah.
Okay, they were in... They're usually in New York. They were out here. It's a network meeting. Gutfield and Levy come in, and you know those two guys. They're looking around, their eyes casting around, and I know immediately what they want. So I got Bernadette and Sylvie. I waved them over, and the five of us went out back to the fire pit. And, you know, the girls are sitting there, and I passed out cigars, and I pulled a 50 out of my pocket.
You already told me that you lit cigars with a $20.
Well, this is a 50, so I guess it's a different story. Okay?
Fine.
And it's Gutfield and Levy, and it ain't the sponge.
Bubba the Love Sponge.
His name is Lubba?
Bubba the Love Sponge.
All right. I lit all five cigars on a $50 bill.
All five?
I got Gutfield, Levy, the two girls, and mine.
All right, so you're feeding the girls. So, and you've got two servers there.
I got two servers, and they're laughing. They're laughing at me lighting cigars with tip money. Because the point that I've been trying to make with you and your listeners is the following. You can take a pocket full of tip money, and you could feed it to a goat. And the servers just keep walking around like, you know. And the reason being, they know, any professional server that works anybody that works in a rub joint of mine, I shouldn't say that, in one of my restaurants, they know that the tip money was left there so that the people who are eating my food that was served to them by individuals who ordinarily the patrons in my restaurant would never be served anything. They'd be serving. And yet there they are being served. The guilt is overwhelming, and so they want to drop some money. We just put it on the bill.
So you charge 15%, so these people, so the guilt feeling they're having isn't as difficult.
Well, you say it, Phil, as if I'm making it up, and I'm not making it up. I've been in the restaurant business. My father drank himself to death.
You know, you told me already about your dad and dying on the golf course, and guys were going through his pockets for the skins money.
Yeah, they were, you know. And I resolved that would never happen to me. I would never be found anywhere. I didn't mind where I'm found, but I'm not going to be found with money in my pocket. That's for sure.
Well, if you're taking tip money off of people...
And I put it in the glove box. Thank you.
877-876-PHIL. We're talking to Ted Bell here about tips. They aren't given to people because the people want the server to know they did a good job. People give tips because they want to feel less guilty about ordering somebody around like an indentured servant. Here is Amanda on the Phil Hendry Show. Amanda in Newton, Massachusetts. Amanda, good evening, and go ahead. You're on with Ted Bell and Phil Hendry.
Hey, how you doing?
Fine, ma'am.
My first point I'd like to make is, now, going above and beyond...
I lit five cigars on it.
I'm sorry?
I'm sorry. I was just saying that I lit five cigars on that 50. I was telling Phil.
I know that, yeah.
Okay. My point about going above and beyond for your customers in your restaurant, it's not about doing, you know, your daily job and doing something that impresses the manager. It's about doing something that impresses the customers. And I'm going to give you an example right now. Okay? I received an email with my company that I was working at as a server. I worked for 9 years as a server. And they stated to me that they had a bad day and they came in to have dinner to make themselves feel better. And their day had been completely shot by a bad real estate deal that had gone down. And they emailed my manager and my corporate company to say that my service made their day better after losing the house of their dreams. The things that I did, the things that I said, the way that I treated them made their day feel better. And I remember those customers, and I remember them leaving me an exceptionally large tip. And if my manager came over to me at the end of the night and said, okay, nice job, you made their day, now give me that money, I would have been absolutely appalled.
All right. Now,
I'm sorry,
I ask you a question, Amanda? This is Ted Bell. I'm Ted Bell, and I want to ask you a question. Did you see the actual email on the computer, or was it printed off and given to you?
I saw the email in the computer, and I have it in my car at all times to remind me that I actually did something to make
somebody
pay.
You know those things are dummied up all the time so that servers will feel better and won't complain too much about, you know, getting stiffed
being
on tips.
Wait.
Are you telling me?
There's a whole company devoted to it.
Wait a second. Let's not be an alpha male for a second and let me talk for a second, okay?
No, I'm not being an alpha. I'm just telling you, they do dummy those things up to make you feel better.
A corporate company does not need to make me feel better about who I am just because I'm serving in a restaurant. I went to the top-ranked culinary institute in the United States to work in restaurants for the rest of my life, and I'm currently a high-ranked pastry chef. So I didn't do this because I had nowhere else to go. I did this because this is what I want to do. I wanted to be a server, and I loved being a server, and I loved being a server because it felt good when those customers knew that I did a good job and they tipped me for it. That's what makes you feel good.
But you don't really know how they feel because they dummy up the email, to make it look like somebody wrote it. But in fact, it was written by somebody at the Horn Institute.
What's the Horn Institute?
Where she said she went.
She went to a culinary institute.
I misunderstood her. I thought she went to... I thought you were... Did you take music at any time?
I went to a culinary institute on the East Coast.
Okay. All right. I understand.
So I've been in restaurants since I was 15 years old.
She just said a coronary institute.
A culinary? Ted, can't you hear?
I can't understand the lady. I'm sorry.
You can't understand me when I'm saying a culinary?
If you said you went to a coronary institute, I'd ask you, what kind of a joint are you working in? I know what culinary is. Obviously, I do. And I would say that you are an outstanding server, regardless of whether anybody has ever said so. Obviously, you know your job, and they know you know your job, and that's why they dummy up the email so you'll feel better and you won't leave and go somewhere else.
So you're telling me that no patron actually wrote an email?
It's very unlikely. Very unlikely. No, I've done it many times.
It's very
times.
Unlikely.
Hey,
the patrons, wait a second.
Bernadette, come here. Look what they wrote about you, eh?
Those patrons came back in and said, hey, did you get our email? And I said, yes. And you know what? At the same time, I was given something by the company for receiving that email as well. So it wasn't a dummy
Amanda,
email.
I know you're calling from the Boston area, and there's a very big SAG guild there. Those are actors, as you know. The Screen Actors Guild is in Boston. And it's very likely that two actors were hired to come in and have dinner.
You live out of reality, and I just want to make.
Are you kidding? Are you telling me that actually happens?
A lot of restaurants will do that when they don't want to lose good people like Amanda. They'll hire a couple of actors, put them into a costume, and they come in. Oh wow, the food's just great. You know,
this corporate company
did
not need to hire people to tell them the food was great. They're a corporate company; they've got plenty of people that go into their restaurant every single day, so they didn't need to hire anybody.
People. It could have been two people from the corporate office that you don't know. It could have been the owner of the restaurant.
The way that you talk about your customers, I'm sorry, but you lack respect for your customers. You're saying that your customers come into your restaurant just to order somebody around and feed them for a night to make themselves feel good. That's not why people go out to dinner.
They don't go out to dinner
and say, feed me, make me a sandwich. That's not why people go out to dinner.
That's what they're thinking. That's human nature. But we still serve them, and we go, yeah, thank you very much, and we grin, and we smile at the end of the night. You know as well as I do, Amanda, we curse their very lives and existence under our breath. But they, you know,
Ted, that it's true for some people, but it's not true for every customer. I have customers. I walked into a movie theater tonight, and a customer's son that I had, I haven't worked in this restaurant in 4 years, the son of one of these customers came up to me in this theater and said, hey, Amanda, you know who I am? I said, no. He said, I'm Karen's son. And then immediately I recognized him, and I said, oh, how's your mom doing? I'm sorry, but these people, you make an impression on these people that go out to dinner.
A tip, it's not so much a tip, it's a guilt fee. You know what I mean by a guilt fee? It's a fee to free them from the guilt of having ordered you around like you're carrying someone's slop bucket.
So you think that, wait a second, let's put into perspective. Okay, so
yeah,
you have a job as a server, and these customers come in and they say, I would like to order this, could you please get me some of this? And then let's put into perspective as like a real estate agent. You're going to the real estate agent and you're saying, hey, I'm looking for this house, this house, this house. Does that person that's trying to buy a house feel guilty for ordering around that real estate agent by saying,
I don't know. I don't know the real estate. I don't know the real estate business. All I can tell
you
is Gutfield and Levy came into my restaurant, and we were lighting $50 bills from the tip money, and they were howling with laughter. And, you know,
you're lighting the tip money of these people that you're paying minimum wage who can't afford their bills because we're in a recession right now, and you're out there in front of them waving your $50 bill around, burning in front of them, and it's killing them. They're not going to say it because
you're Amanda, you're a pastry chef. You're not a doctor, okay? So you're not changing lives here. All we're doing is we're serving them. You know, we're going back into this. We're going into the soup bowl. We're throwing something in a bowl, throwing something on a plate, dropping it in front of them and saying bonjour or whatever French stuff you want to say. And
boy, Ted, it sounds to me like you hate your work.
Hate my work?
How could you enjoy... You know, you throw something on a plate, go out there, light $50 bills, ha, ha, ha. Hey, Bernadette and Sylvia, come on out here and sit in Gutfield and Levy's laps. I mean, what is that?
Oh, now, wait just a minute.
No, what is that, man? Those two girls are hired to serve. You got them sitting in laps.
Now, you hold the phone, friend. Hold the phone. Those guys spread a lot of money around in my place.
So you don't auction off your servers because they spend a lot of money at your place. They're human beings, and you have to treat them like
human beings. I'm not auctioning anybody off. I don't auction anyone off. There's a flat, not a flat fee. I was going to say that.
A flat fee?
I didn't say anything like that.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
Wow, I heard it too. I'm with you.
Wait a second. I'm a sponsor on this program.
I heard you say there's a flat fee to have Amanda and Sylvia sit in your lap.
I didn't say my lap, did I? So I just got you on that one.
In a customer's lap.
I'm not going to sit on anybody's lap.
No, he's stuttering. Well, Amanda, before you sit on anyone's lap, obviously we'd have to have a... Now, I guess you're going to think I'm being rude, but I don't want you bruising people, you know. I'd have to get a good look at you. But the point that I'm making...
You're not going to get any look at me because, first of all, my girlfriend would come over and kick you in the nuts. I'm sorry, but she'd kill you.
What are your girlfriend? Oh, I get it.
We don't do that in Pennsylvania, do we?
Here we go. You got these diesels that are going to pull a knife on me, huh? You're going to stick me?
No, I'm...
A diesel is going to stick me.
What's a diesel?
You know what I mean.
All right.
I was a server in a very respectable restaurant, so I don't have that look. Okay, my girlfriend was a
Are you
a
pastry
well.
Chef or a lesbian or a doctor or what are you? Because you're changing professions as we speak. One minute you're telling me the psychology of lighting a $50 bill. The next minute you've got some diesel that's going to stick me with a prison fashion shank. Then you're...
You know what, Amanda? Very good call, okay?
Well, here he goes again.
No, it was a very good call. I got to move on. I appreciate it very much. 877-876-PHIL. Would you not say diesel, please?
She just... said that she's got a... God.
877-876-PHIL. We'll be back with the final segment with Ted Bell on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Thank God.
Phil Henry.
Do I get shanked and Amanda gets the gun? Forget it.
Phil Henry Show.
Ted's of Beverly Hills Steakhouse, come on down.
This is Ted Bell. I'd like to invite you to my restaurant. I think that the way my restaurant has been portrayed on this show tonight has been unfair. And if you don't come to my restaurant as a result of this, I would understand that.
That's not fair.
Well, that's exactly what's happened.
You know what? I don't think that is fair. Get Ted Bell's lineup for me. I can't even hear you, man. I can't understand why you said that.
Because of the way that I've been treated on your program tonight, I would be shocked if I get one Christian soul in my restaurant tomorrow. And you called me a thief, you called me a liar, you called me a pervert.
No, I have not, Ted.
You said that I'm
I'm paying a fee for women.
Didn't you say a flat fee?
No, I did not.
All right. Okay, I believe you.
Right.
877-876-PHIL, as we talk about the policy at Ted's Restaurant and maybe other restaurants where they don't give the tips to the servers. They just charge a flat tip fee on the bill, and then Ted keeps the money because he's the only one doing work above and beyond. He has to walk around and meet and greet people. Here's Karen on the Phil Hendry Show with Ted Bell. Karen, go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. I have a couple of questions, but I understand, you know, a minimum tip added on. I don't have a problem with that. And usually if you're going to that restaurant, you kind of already know ahead of time that's a way. But if I have good service, I develop a relationship, you know, like I ask for something maybe a little different and I'm taken care of, you know, I have no, you know, I want a tip extra. But that's because, you know, the history when I was a server years ago, it was, you lived on.
You feel guilty.
I mean,
you feel guilty.
Why else would you do it? I mean,
you
I
feel,
kinda...
but you feel guilty. You feel guilty because you're changing your mind every time you go in. Hey, do this, do that. You're kind of running them through
no.
a gauntlet just for amusement.
I do not enjoy ordering people around. I mean, I think.
Well, no, wait. Didn't you say that you try different things and you just try to see how they react? Because it's almost like in a lot
no,
of ways,
I
and I don't blame you, but yeah, the way that they treat these like an ape in a lab.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, what you
saying? The lady is saying that she likes to come into the restaurant at different times and do different things to watch and see how the servers react.
I'm saying sometimes, you know, I'll do that. I mean, when you're talking about above
right.
and beyond,
exactly.
You know,
exactly.
those are kind of extra things. But I have a.
So
couple,
you're experimenting
you know,
with them.
Okay, fine.
She's
I have
not experimenting with them.
Do you? I mean. I'm different. I mean, I've owned some businesses before, but,
uh-huh.
I mean, they're different types of businesses, but,
right.
you know, I always treat people respectfully, and, you know, I feel like as an owner, if you want to make some money and you want return customers and everybody in your staff to be happy in a good atmosphere, then, yeah, it is part of your job to go out there and make sure that your customers are taken care of. Because what I want to know is, did you go talk to those students from Bethlehem? Did you go out and greet them and ask what was going on with
no,
them?
No, ma'am, that's not my restaurant. I'm in Beverly Hills, California.
Oh, okay.
That's a different restaurant. Yeah.
No,
okay.
I'm in Beverly. I don't have Bethlehem. I had to ask Phil. Was he talking about the place where, Jesus was born? And he laughed.
Yeah.
No,
it wasn't Bethlehem.
It wasn't that Bethlehem.
I doubt
if they've got a steakhouse there yet. You know, probably still kosher there, but.
Can you just
go ahead
for a second? I know you're sponsored the show, and I think that, you know, you're getting great, you know, you're getting great stuff for your sponsorship. Did you pay for your sponsorship out of those tips? I mean, that's one question. But another one is, what about your bartenders? You know, do they get a flat fee? Do they get tips? Do they have to turn those in?
They do less work than anybody. They do less work than anybody because the customer comes to them. They just stand in one place.
Yeah,
I don't understand these questions.
All right. Thank you. Very good question, ma'am. 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back. Ted Bell on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. 877-876-PHIL.
Yeah, say it again, man, okay? I missed it.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Back with Ted Bell here on our Ted's of Beverly Hills segment. Each week, Ted comes on and we talk about business. And boy, is business a very, very important subject these days in America. But we're talking about tips and we're talking about should you pay them or not, because we had this incident in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Ted, you keep the tip money that is tacked onto the bill, and you keep it because you're the only guy that goes above and beyond. Now, what if they give you cash? Because you've been mentioning cash here.
If they leave it on the table, it is a tip that was a part of what we tack onto the bill. Now, look, let me tell you a story here, Phil, because you know that a lot of big celebrities and actors and everything come into my restaurant, and I'm not trying to drop names or anything.
Well, you've been dropping them pretty good tonight.
No, I have not, Phil. That's very unfair.
You mentioned Bubba the Love Sponge, Greg Gutfield, Andy Levy.
That's not name dropping. All right. Okay. Oh wow, Bubba the Love Sponge. Well, that really—that's going to get the—that's going to get the Inquirer in my place, isn't it? I chased one of those guys away from the front door one night. Did you know that?
What?
One of those Inquirer guys. I chased him away from the front. They hang around the front of Maestro's. They hang around the front of all these places, but not me. When I see one of those long-haired and they got the greasy-haired creep with the camera, I tell them either they're going to get lost or they're going to be a part of the grill of my Jaguar. What do you think of that?
You know, Ted, you're real good at bullying people, man.
Let me tell you what happened the other night. This kid came in. He is a singer. Forgive me, I don't know his name. He said his album went platinum. And I said, you know, that's great. I don't know what that means. It sold a lot of albums, right?
Yeah, the album goes platinum. Who was it?
It was not Oscar Mayer. Oscar Mayer's the baloney, right? Yeah, it's the baloney company. Although if you heard his music, maybe you thought it was baloney. I don't know. Oscar Mayer?
Oscar Mayer, who came into your restaurant?
I'm trying to think. The guy's name is Oscar Mayer, or it's
John Mayer.
Yes, John Mayer. John Mayer.
Oscar Mayer, and you get the John Mayer.
I don't know who he is. He's a nice man, though. He came in and he tipped me a Benjamin. Who's the guy? A Benjamin Franklin. Okay. You want to know what I did with it? I said, "Hey, John, look at this." I went outside. And I lit up the fattest Cohiba I had left in the humidor, and he laughed. He laughed until he was sick. I'm serious. He laughed until we had to towel it up. So you see, Phil, you know, they...
So you say you're really telling a nice story about John Mayer, aren't you? You're saying that here's John Mayer, a man that's loved by people, and he came in and he gave you a $100 tip, and you lit a cigar with it, and he laughed.
Well, he was laughing at something. You know, I don't know his music. He did a song about bodies and a wonderland of bodies. Do you know that?
No, I don't. Your body is a wonderland.
Thank you. I'm kidding around.
You know, you can kid all you want, but the fact is you've got employees who could use that money that you're lighting cigars with.
You know something, Phil? A terrible lie has been told in this country. People pay tips to help the servers. It's a lie. It's a lie. It's a lie. They don't. They pay that money so they can walk out of that restaurant and feel assured that they'll make it home without pulling over, putting a pistol in their mouth, and sending the bullet and what few brains they have to the back window. Because I can tell you...
Oh, my God.
I can tell you they feel guilty ordering people around to serve them like they're working in a saloon.
877-876-PHIL. We'll go to a phone call here. And listening to us in Peoria, Illinois, is Kevin. Kevin, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Ted Bell. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, Phil. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Ted, I got a question for you.
Do you
credit cards at your restaurant there?
Of course.
Of course? Well, let me ask you this. Every one of your servers have their own individual number when they log into that credit card machine so you can keep it all straight at the end of the night?
Their individual number?
Yeah, every server should have an individual number that they log in with on the credit card machine when they ring up a check, correct?
I'd have to check and see, but if that's the way it goes, sure. They usually take it over to the bar, and I have the kid that works the bar, who's an Iranian kid, he usually processes it through.
All right, well, then the next question is, who's paying the taxes on that? Are you paying the taxes on their tips?
Who's paying the taxes on the tips? They do.
Yes, sir. Okay, so the help pays the taxes on the tip, and you
collect
the money. Is that how that works?
Exactly.
Exactly. Oh, that sounds real good. That sounds real good. If you did actually operate a restaurant, I think the IRS would be really interested in that. Next question for you.
I did actually. You know what? You come on out to Beverly Hills, the steak's on me.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's great. I can get all the steak I want. I run my own restaurant, Chief. Next question.
Excuse me, Beverly Hills, I said, not Peoria, and I don't want to, you know, I could go a long way with that one, but I...
Don't knock where the guy is. You know, you're both fellow businessmen, okay?
Look, this guy is trying to call me a crook. You don't think I'm that stupid, do you?
I run my business
above board. You do? You want to know who one of my best friends is? David L. Snowden. You know who he is? The chief of police of Beverly Hills.
Let me ask you a question.
I know cops, and cops know me.
I'll bet they do.
Whatever that means.
About, let's talk about food costs.
Is he still here?
Let's talk about
this is the restaurant
costs.
Guy?
What percentage? What percentage?
Hey, what is it? 20? Let's talk about your restaurant. What do you do for a living?
I run a restaurant.
You own it or do you run it?
My parents own it. I run it.
Well, how about that?
Now,
so they got you in a monkey suit, and you think you got the whole thing figured out? If you did, you'd be running the rest. You'd be owning that thing. You know that your mother and father don't want you to have your hands on that restaurant because they know that you may have your hand in the till.
That's not even fair to say, Ted, because
this guy's calling me a crook. How do I know he's not robbing his own mother and father?
You know,
this
conversation that we're having here is...
When's the last time John Mayer came into your restaurant, or whatever his name is?
I was there last week. I lit a cigar with a $100 bill.
Yeah, he was there last week. He was just swinging through Peoria, what, to pick up guitar picks?
No, he was dropping off $100 bill so I could light a cigar with him.
He's dropping off $100 bill so you could keep the heat on in the place?
Yeah, that's exactly what he's doing.
Okay.
Let's
there
talk food costs there, Ted. What percentage
do
you
have?
Restaurant?
They do have a program for that. It's called welfare.
Okay.
Welfare, huh? That's good, Ted.
Yeah,
that's where you're going
to
be.
In other words, you don't have to have John Mayer come by. You could just ask the state to pay for your heat.
Oh, I could, but we actually managed to make money.
I got that wrong. I got that wrong. Your mommy and dad could.
They could. But, you see, the problem is that I know what our food costs is. I know what our bar costs are. What are yours? What percentage of yours?
You know what your bar costs are because you guys couldn't make near as much money as I do. If you can figure out your bar costs on a napkin, good luck.
See, the funny thing is you don't want to answer because
you know what? You're a little bit of a lightweight. You know, you're too easy.
That's the funny part.
I need some fast. I want some faster comebacks. I just said to you, you can figure out your bar costs because you can do it all on a cocktail napkin. Okay, come back. Come back.
I'm just waiting for
the percentage. This kid's slow. He's too slow. The kid's too slow.
What percentage is your food?
And I also told him that I knew the chief of police of Beverly Hills.
It doesn't matter if you know the chief of police of Beverly. Answer the man's question.
What's his question? Come on.
What percentage of the nightly take is your food cost? What percentage is your liquor cost?
Your voice is cracking.
What?
You know what that tells me?
You don't know? Do you do your own books?
It tells me that you're nervous. Do
you
I do the books?
You to do your books. I mean,
what is this?
How does that work?
Do I bring in a what?
Books? Is that how that works?
A Pollock? That's how they talk in Peoria, Phil. I forgot. Hey, you talk that crap. Why don't you come on out here? Hey, why don't you come out here and talk that crap down on Garvey?
You don't know, do you?
Come on out and talk your Pollock. Come on out and talk all your Pollock talk down on Garvey. See how long
you
last.
You don't know what percentage of your bar.
You don't know how to stay alive. Okay, you got a bigger problem than me. What's your bar cost? What's your bar tab at the end of a usual work night?
What is that supposed to mean?
He's probably drinking it. I know why this guy can keep track of the stock, because he drinks half of it.
I keep track of my stock.
You know, Ted, you're about as unprofessional. First of all, you've been talking about stealing money. Then you're mocking this guy. Then you're saying that he's drinking up his stock. You haven't answered any questions that he's been asking.
This guy's talking about Pollocks. You want me to take him seriously?
The fact of the matter is, he's asking you some serious questions. You've made some pretty astounding statements here tonight. Charging a flat fee for waitresses, lighting cigars with $100 bills. You know the chief of police of Beverly Hills.
I do.
John Mayer came in and tipped you $100. You know, Levy and Gutfield, all of this stuff. And this guy runs a restaurant, and he...
His mother and father run the restaurant, okay? He takes orders from them.
The fact is, he knows the business of the restaurant and has asked you... A lot of questions.
Wait a minute. What is this asking me questions? I sponsor this segment of the program. Have you got a jingle, kid? Hey, kid.
Yeah.
Kid, have you got a jingle?
I got a jingle in my pocket right now.
No. I mean, do you have a commercial advertising budget? I guess you didn't know what I meant.
No.
I bet you that's how you figure out how much money you got, by the way, though, to see how much your pocket's jingling. But listen to this.
We have a good
listen
restaurant.
To this
we don't actually have to
and
advertise.
We. Yeah, this cost me a lot of money. Now, I want you to, Kevin, is that his name? No, Kevin, right?
Yeah, it's Kevin.
Kevin, listen to this line. I paid a lot of money for this line that's coming up. Not this.
That's because your restaurant's terrible.
Listen to this.
You don't have to pay to advertise.
No, I know about your restaurant in Peoria, okay? That's where all of the diseased cows are dropped off.
We want to put our meat in your mouth.
How about that? We want to put our meat in your mouth.
All right. Thank you very much. Kevin, good luck with your restaurant, man. Good luck with your restaurant.
No problem. My brother.
All right, man. 877-877.
You cut off Ted Bell. He's going to be mad.
I don't care. He's starting to highlight, hey, listen to this line. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry. Famous Phil Henry Show.
877-876-PHIL. We're going to get to the stories we didn't get to. Thanks to Ted Bell. I don't know for what, man.
You know, I got off the phone with him. He's pretty mad on account of you hung up on him. And he said you left him, that he's got a towel off.
What do you mean he's got a towel off? You know, that guy was talking all kinds of smack all night long about his restaurant and what you do with tip money. And he finally has a guy who's challenging him. That kid runs a restaurant.
Yeah, but Ted said that kid was not off the nipple yet.
Well, for not being off the nipple yet, I mean, he was asking Ted a lot of really good questions. And all Ted could say was stuff like, you got your hand in the till.
Yeah, and then another thing Ted said.
I don't want to know what Ted said through you.
Yeah, man. Ted can call him up himself. He's got the number.
He does?
Yes, he does. He has my number, okay?
Oh, okay, because I gave him your home number.
Don't give him my... Out of here with that. All right, Arkansas cops suspended. Now, this, after listening to you, Bud, and after listening to Ted, this is actually a relaxing story. Arkansas cops suspended after using taser on girl age 10. But wait a minute. Wait a minute. This is an example of another one of those misleading headlines. A police officer used a stun gun on an unruly 10-year-old girl after he said her mother gave him permission has been suspended, but not for using the taser. No, he was suspended for not having a video camera attached when he used it. That's what he got suspended for. Mayor Vernon McDaniel said Officer Dustin Bradshaw was suspended Wednesday for 7 days with pay. McDaniel said the suspension is not following department procedures because he didn't have the camera on. McDaniel wants Arkansas State Police, the FBI, to look into whether the use of the taser was proper. The girl, who wasn't identified, wasn't injured, and is now at the Western Arkansas Youth Shelter in Cecil. Now listen to this. Police were called to the home on November the 11th after the girl's mother couldn't get her to take a shower. Bradshaw's report says the girl was violently kicking and verbally combative when Bradshaw tried to take her into custody, and she kicked him in the groin. He said he delivered a very brief drive stun to her back. A dry stun is what it's called. That is they directly attach it. Her mother told him to taser if I needed to, Bradshaw wrote. Kim Brunell, a spokeswoman with the FBI in Little Rock, said her office neither confirms nor denies when it's involved in an investigation and declined to comment. State police have declined to comment. Police Chief Jim Noggle said Wednesday that tasers are a safe way to subdue people who are a danger to themselves or others. We didn't use the taser to punish the child, just to bring the child under control so she wouldn't hurt herself or somebody else. If the officer tried to forcefully put the girl in handcuffs, he could have accidentally broken her arm or leg. When have we said that? Gee, I heard somebody say that. Oh, I know who it was. Me. He said a touch of the stun gun less than a second stopped the girl from being unruly, and she was handcuffed. She got up immediately, and they put her in the patrol car. I don't have a problem with it. I don't give a damn if she is 10. I just don't. And you know something else? These stun guns and these tasers and all of these other weapons that have been used in the past by police officers, they're used for one reason, because chokehold is out, baton is out, guns are out. Gradually, we narrow the area of operation for police officers in subduing suspects. We don't want them to get the crap kicked out of them. We don't want them to get billy sticked to death. We don't want them to get shot. We don't want them to get thrown off a cliff. We don't want them to get their arms or their necks or their legs broken because the cop, we don't want a chokehold so they die from suffocation. But somehow we tell these cops to go out there and get people under control to bring them someplace. All right, I'm done.
That's pretty good, Mr. Henry.
Thank you. All right, 877-876-PHIL, the number here on our world-famous Phil Henry Show each and every night. We do have the, our stories that we couldn't get to that are forthcoming. A reminder on our website, philhenryshow.com. You can go over and you can check out the on-demand video of the show tonight. Just head on over to philhenryshow.com. We'll have the on-demand up by tomorrow, and you can see a five-day archive of on-demand video. The stories we didn't get to tonight. A suburban Philadelphia police chief says two teenagers being held after officers arrested them and found video recordings they made of themselves burglarizing homes. Nice move. Upper Darby Police Department Michael Chitwood told reporters on Wednesday that the 15 and 16-year-old boys terrorized the neighborhood with their burglaries and added a bizarre twist with the video recordings. Chitwood says in one of the homes they unwrapped Christmas presents and stole electronic games. He says they can be heard on the video, remarking that Christmas came early for them. Police say they had just set off a burglar alarm when officers caught them on the street with backpacks full of around $1,000 worth of stolen goods, mostly electronics. They're being held in juvenile detention. In Fargo, North Dakota, Fargo police said a man ran over a light pole and punched a police officer in the mouth when the officer tried to arrest him. Police Sergeant Mark Lycan said police got a report about 2 a.m. Thursday that a pickup hit a light pole and pulled into a nearby parking lot. Lycan said the driver allegedly hit an officer in the mouth with his fist when the officer went to arrest him in his apartment. Police said the light pole had to be disconnected because of the damage. The driver faces charges that include drunken driving and assault against an officer. And when it's cold, too, man.
That's gotta hurt.
A two-year-old in North Mississippi has done something few toddlers can. He helped his mother give birth to his brother. Bobby Favaza is his name. He told the commercial... Bobby Favaza is the mom. And she told the commercial appeal she went into labor this past Friday and gave birth on the family's living room couch in Olive Branch. She said her toddler, Jeremiah Taylor, got her a towel and caught the baby before firefighters arrived to cut the umbilical cord. Favaza gave birth to a 7-pound, 4-ounce baby boy named Cameron Taylor. Is that heavy or what, man? She had been scheduled for a cesarean section on December the 6th. City Emergency Services Supervisor Greg Minot said the 9/11 call about Favaza was probably the third this year about a woman in labor, but usually the mother makes it to the hospital before delivery. Moldavian soldiers have been issued with an extra ration of onions and garlic to ward off swine flu. Yeah, you thought I was going to say vampires, huh?
Ain't that Transylvania?
No, it's Moldova or Moldova or something. Anyway, that's according to the Defense Ministry. We've introduced an extra 25 grams of onion and 15 grams of garlic in their daily ration, said a Defense Ministry spokesperson. You know, that's pretty smart, man.
You're going to stink to high heaven, man.
Yeah, it doesn't make any difference if you don't get swine. I'd rather smell to high heaven, man, than get the swine, I'll tell you that. So far, 24 soldiers have completed treatment for swine flu, while 19 are in the hospital with acute respiratory infections. Moldova has registered more than 900 cases of the virus infection. This week, most schools and universities reopened after a quarantine period was lifted, but 5 schools and 1 university remain closed. Keep that in mind, you guys. That's 1 ounce of onion and 15 grams of garlic. Ooh, baby, are you going to stink? A town on New York's Long Island is hoping for better attendance at its 16th annual holiday boat parade this year by restoring Christmas to the event's name. The Patchogue Riverfront Committee says it's decided to rename the event Christmas Holiday Boat Parade after taking over sponsorship from the local Chamber of Commerce. Last year's event was renamed Holiday Boat Parade after some residents complained that the name wasn't inclusive enough. They wanted Kwanzaa on there, and there's nothing but white people. Anyway, the committee says the ensuing controversy led to a dramatic drop-off in spectators. It says it's restoring the word Christmas to recognize that most of the participants celebrate the holiday. The parade featured Santa Claus. It's going to be held on Sunday at the Patchogue River. They ought to rename the town, though. I mean, they can maybe they ought to call it Christmas Town.
Phil Henry.